It is 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and as mentioned, joined on Thursdays at this time by Jim Bilby, a professor of Christian theology, who just helps us navigate such difficult questions of faith week in and week out. We've talked about suffering. We've talked about things like astrotheology and alien life. And this morning, we're going to get down into the real life, I think, where so many of us are living. I've been teaching human sexuality for the better part of 10 years. And I would say over the last 5 or 6 years, the conversation around same-gender relationships has exploded in my classroom. And it is so tricky and difficult to navigate. And of course, the headline I referenced, Jim, that was so tough this week was not only are we experiencing so many questions around our gender and our identity and same-sex attraction, but then you combine it with the rise of depression, the rise of bullying on social media. And so you have this incredible, difficult storm all coming together in a situation of a 9-year-old boy who took his own life this past week after coming out to his mother that he was gay and then experiencing the bullying that it was exacerbated in school and then took his life. You know, if you're listening this morning, you have comments or questions or thoughts on this or any of the questions, again, please call or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. But Jim, just sort of first impression of the story. Where do we even begin to process this situation?
Yeah, Peter, this is a great example of sometimes these questions that become paralyzing. Because, one, they're just so controversial, and we feel like if we say anything, we're going to say something wrong, right? But even more than that, this is paralyzing because there's so many different layers of this. So let me just try to kind of peel back some of the layers of this onion. There's, of course, the biblical question. Well, what should we Christians think about homosexuality? And that actually, I'm not saying it's an easy question, but I think it's relatively easy compared to some of the other psychological, sociological, cultural questions,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So there's that layer of the question. But even, and I think much more difficult, is the cultural phenomenon that we're experiencing that is pushing kids at this incredibly young age to, this is who I am and this is who I identify. And certainly what we know is that there are children that have, if the term is gender dysphoria, that they have sort of questions about their identity and whether they're guy enough or whether they're female enough at young ages. And what we also know is that many times at those early onset gender dysphoria resolves itself if sort of left alone. But the problem is we're not leaving it alone. So both by peers that are bullying, both by, you know, parents that have incredible amount of anxiety. Oh, no, my goodness, my kid isn't what I thought they would be. And then try to push them into some sort of a mold by the various ideologues in the conversation that want to grab onto this and use this kid as a tool to see my view on this particular issue is justified, because there's just so much of that that happens. And then let's not lose sight of the fact that we're dealing with, which you guys talked about in the last segment, a tidal wave of mental illness, and the implications of this are absolutely profound. And in the final analysis, a 9-year-old is loved by God, child of God, is not alive right now because of that.
Yeah, it's so well said, and you talk about the complexity and layers of it. And I mean, to think about being 9 years old and having to create a central identity of yourself based on some kind of attraction you may or may not be having. I mean, these are tricky conversations. You mentioned that we change and things develop, so to just fix ourselves in place and time based on some sort of experience. And of course, in the classrooms today, especially with the state mandates and government mandates around same-sex marriage in our country, that as early as 5, 6, and 7-year-old in the classroom, they're introducing young people to the idea that they might be gay, they might be straight, they might be transgender. I mean, we're so malleable, we're so moldable. And so the power of this suggestion, you know, this is really early to be having any of these conversations.
Yeah, it's really early. And then to add it even, you know, kind of additional layer to that, that makes us even worse. Our gender expectations are sometimes really unreasonable. So, I mean, think of it. Young girls look at, you know, magazines to, this is what it looks like to be a woman. And they look at themselves and, oh, I'm not this. And they, of course, they're not. They're not even developmentally to that place. And so they start wondering, oh, what's wrong with me? Guys, well, you know, to be a guy is be big and strong, and you got to be a football player. And just biologically, there are some guys that are the alpha male, you know, types, and, you know, little kids, there's a little kid version of that, that they're stronger and bigger than the other kids. But there's the little kid in the class, the little boy that is like, I'm not the biggest, I'm not the strongest. Am I okay? Then am I really actually a male? Am I really? So we are creating additional gender dysphoria by our sort of narrow gender expectations that society places on these kids. And then we're making it worse by almost encouraging them to, and go think about this, because really you might be transgender, you might be this, or you might be this. And these kids are not emotionally capable of engaging these questions.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And as parents, I mean, I think about this mother, and as the story goes, is that her son was in the back seat when sort of cautiously and then said to his mom that, Mom, I think I'm gay. And she responded by saying, I love you, son. And I'd be curious your thoughts, Jim, as this is going to be, I'm sure so many of the families that are listening today are experiencing these kinds of conversations within their own family or friendships. What do you suggest as sort of a first blush reaction? If somebody that you're close to comes out and says, you know, I really believe that I'm gay, or I really believe that I might be transgender, what, you know, how do we approach this in the moment that is most helpful for the long-term future?
It's a question actually that my wife is a therapist, and really probably she'd be better at it than I, but I think trying to channel what she says, I think I probably, the first thing is you have to manage your own anxiety, right? So if my child comes to me and has this scary sort of, I think I might be gay, or I might be this or that or the other thing, suddenly all my expectations for what I wanted them to be are like crumbling before my eyes. And so often my response, or the response of parents, becomes about me, becomes about managing my fears and managing my expectations. And the most important thing I think we can do is to be there for the kid at this moment. And it sounds like now we're getting a, you know, secondhand report of, or, you know, we weren't there at the time, but it sounds like this mom did very well.
Right.
And that is, listen, I love you. Right. I mean, there is, I can say there is nothing my kids could come and tell me that would cause me to not love them. And they need to know that. And I need to tell them that, and that, you know, whatever they're dealing with, I'm going to be walking through that with them, shoulder to shoulder, you know, carrying them through if I need to be. And that is the most fundamental thing, that they have a support structure at home as they're dealing with these things. Because oftentimes outside world and school, and certainly social media, just the disaster that is these days, those are not supportive places. So they need to know there's this safe place.
Jim Bilby, professor of Christian theology. And if you want to join the conversation, have some thoughts on what we're talking about this morning, which is how to navigate the difficult conversations going around same gender and transgenderism in our culture, you can join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Jim, when we come back from break, I'm going to ask you, so that initial move that I think is so rightly ordered, that we start by saying absolutely love is without question. What does the journey look like then from there in the months and the years ahead, and when these scenarios come up? So more to come with Jim Bilby here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Capster, and joined in studio by Dr. Jim Bilby, a professor of Christian theology, who joins me on Thursdays just talking about so many of the difficult conversations we often don't talk about in our faith. And of course, this morning we're talking a bit about same gender attraction, but specifically the story of the young boy who took his life after coming out of the closet, saying to his mother he was gay, and then receiving some of the bullying online. And Jim, again, the tentacles of the story, we could go anywhere, need hundreds of hours on this, from social media to bullying to same gender to how we as parents come around our kids. There's just so much to get to. Sort of in our last bit of time that we have together this morning, you mentioned that as this first move that this mother did, and at least the reports indicate that she just said, I love you, son, and that's such an important first move in anybody close to us, friend or family member, to just be, this is without question. But what do the next 24 hours look like? What do the next 3 months look like? What are the next year? I mean, how do we, if we don't agree with this decision and it's our own kids that we're trying to mold and shape and shepherd, how do we as parents continue to come around them if there's a disagreement about this idea of same gender relationship? That's got to be one of the trickiest things of this process.
Yeah, clearly. So I don't know if there's any nice, neat, here's the blueprint and here's how it works, but a couple of general principles seem reasonable here, right? The idea of finding a therapist that is qualified to think through these issues and to, even more than that, to draw out of that child, the person asking this question, to draw out their feelings and to help them talk about that, I think is really important, right? So again, we have a, as you in your last section segment, we're talking about this mental health crisis, and we have this stigma surrounding mental health, and so then we have a corollary stigma surrounding therapy, and so therapy is what crazy people do, right?
Right, and
this person isn't crazy, so so there's this all this fear, and I think just having a person who is an expert in drawing people's questions out, drawing people's emotions out, helping them connect their emotions and feelings, that is absolutely a crucial step. And so that's if my child comes to me and says, I feel like I'm dealing with these issues, I first tell them I love them. The second thing I do is I talk to my people, my network, and I'm like, who is a good person for my child to be talking to right now? Who should I connect them with? And I create resources, because parents aren't, we can love our kids and we're the front line for that, but there's so much going on that we can't deal with it all ourselves. So we have to find our people. We have to find our resources and draw them together. And so that would start with a person who is a therapist, right? I would also try to find people in my child's life who had wrestled with these sorts of things before, right? And that they can, you know, see an example of this isn't a disaster that you can come through on the other side.
Yeah, and that, I mean, if your child is willing and receptive to just continue to have conversations, to just sort of gently suggest their identity is not in our sexuality. Our identity is in being a son or a daughter of the king. And we may be having experiences of attractions, but those experiences don't necessarily speak to identity if there's an openness. But if not, and if the child is saying, no, this is who I am. And we just had a question from somebody texting in the studio. What do we do when that might be the situation, and maybe even more so, where parents will say that they're going to intentionally raise their child as gay or lesbian, that they're going to embrace? How do we walk this out when there is an intentional embrace that says we are going to raise our children as gay or lesbian?
Well, the question, I suppose, is how should we Christians think about such events?
Sure.
I'm just going to say, part of me, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because here's the difficulty here. As a Christian, I look at that scenario and I say, well, that seems like a pretty bad choice. But here's the deal. There's a lot of bad choices being made in our culture. And I think one of the things that we Christians do that is not ideal is that we sort of take responsibility for all the bad things in the culture. And suddenly now I need to stamp that out.
Right.
And it's very difficult to stamp that out without the kids involved in the situation feel like you're trying to stamp them out, especially if they see this as their identity. So I want to, I think the fundamental question is, how do we as Christians deal with our own things? And once we sort of get that figured out, then I think we're in a lot better position to suggest a better path, and maybe hopefully if we figure it out, if we do well with this, we don't even have to suggest. I mean, it'll be more obvious and more profound. But undoubtedly, it is a symptom in culture where if parents are sort of encouraging this and, oh yeah, this is who you are at this incredibly young age, it's a symptom of something deeply broken in our culture that we think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So anything we can do big picture to discourage that, to talk about gender identity or gender dysphoria as being, you know, it's natural for people to have questions, to ask questions about that. And when we sort of like encourage those questions and go, that means you're this, that's a really dangerous path to go down.
Yeah, we just have a couple minutes left in this, and I think it's so important. You mentioned just the idea that we want to just sort of try to stamp stuff out right away whenever it is maybe antithetical to what we believe. But is there a possibility without it being just acquiescing to the situation of taking the long view to say, you know what, we're going to have to just see how this plays out for a while, and we've got to work on our own stuff because it might just shine a light in a different kind of way over time, and maybe there'll be an invitation in the future. But I don't know about you. I hardly ever find that it works to come and say, I'm against this, and it should stop right now. It just almost ends up kind of just dispersing the whole thing.
Well, and oftentimes what you do is you just cause people to dig in and sort of become intractable in their arguments. And again, that's one thing if you're talking about two adults, like I disagree. And that's okay, fine. That's disagreement, I think, is healthy. And we're a little scared of it in this culture. Let's disagree more. Let's disagree well, but let's disagree. What I worry about is when we, you know, dig in and we like, no, this is terrible. We're steamrolling people. We're becoming part of the machine that causes the 9-year-old to feel like they're wrong, yeah, that they're not okay, that their life isn't worth anything. And more than anything, we Christians have to avoid anything like that.
Jim, it's such helpful advice, and also recognizing the time is too short. We just knew we need about 127 hours on this subject at the very least, yeah. I find. So we'd love to have you back in, maybe even for a full hour next time to talk specifically about so many of the dimensions of this. We're getting calls and texts that we just couldn't get to this morning, and we'd love to address that in the future. So thanks for joining us as you do here on Thursdays on Faith Radio.
My pleasure, Peter.